I have a little something to read, but after the arti, it's a really nice section from the 12th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this particular section, it's what we're discussing in the Bhagavatam right now. It's a beautiful story about a great sage. His name is Markandeya Rishi, and he conquers death. But in this particular section, Lord Indra sends Cupid to break Markandeya's vows. And the heavenly singers and dancers try to seduce Markandeya. But Markandeya defeats the mischief makers. And then after he defeats them, Naranarayan Rishi appear to him. And Markandeya enters into a transcendental ecstasy, and he greets the Lord. And he experiences Krishna's direct association. The verse we read today from the Bhagavatam, it says here that, text 14, it says here that this man taking sannyas is going to surpass us, these are the demigods speaking, and go back home, back to Godhead. Thus thinking, the demigods create stumbling blocks on the path of the sannyasi by appearing before him in the shape of his former wife, or other women and attractive objects. But the sannyasi should pay the demigods and their manifestations no heed. So it's a really interesting section from the Bhagavatam. But I will read that after the arti. Okay. I have a quick story to read. This is the story of Markandeya. And in this particular section, Lord Indra sends Cupid and the damsels of heaven to illusion Markandeya so that he will fall down. And here's the story. To ruin the sage's spiritual practice, Lord Indra sent Cupid, beautiful celestial singers, dancing girls, the season of spring, and the sandalwood-scented breeze of the Malayan hills, along with greed and intoxication personified. O most powerful Shanaka, they went to Markandeya's hermitage on the northern side of the Himalayan mountains, where the Pushpabhadra River passes by the famous peak Chaitra. Groves of pious trees decorated the holy ashram of Markandeya Rishi, and many saintly Brahmins lived there, enjoying abundant, pure, sacred ponds. The ashram resounded with the buzzing of intoxicated bees and the cooing of excited cuckoos, while jubilant peacocks danced about. Indeed, many families of maddened birds crowded that hermitage. The springtime breeze sent by Lord Indra entered there, carrying cooling drops of spray from nearby waterfalls. Fragrant from the embrace of forest flowers, that breeze entered the hermitage and began evoking the lusty spirit of Cupid. Springtime then appeared in Markandeya's ashram. Indeed, the evening sky, glowing with the light of the rising moon, became the very face of spring, and sprouts and fresh blossoms virtually covered the multitude of trees and creepers. Cupid, the master of many heavenly women, then came there, holding his bow and arrows. He was followed by groups of Gandharvas playing musical instruments and singing. These servants of Indra found the sage sitting in meditation, having just offered his prescribed oblations into the sacrificial fire. His eyes closed in trance, he seemed invincible, like fire personified. The women danced before the sage, and the celestial singers sang to the charming accompaniment of drums, cymbals, and veenas. While the sun of passion, greed personified, spring and the other servants of Indra all tried to agitate Markandeya's mind, Cupid drew his five-headed arrow and fixed it upon his bow. The Apsara, Punji Kashtali, made a show of playing with a number of toy balls. Her waist seemed weighted down by her heavy breasts, and the wreath of flowers in her hair became disheveled. As she ran about after the balls, glancing here and there, the belt of her thin garment loosened, and suddenly the wind blew away her clothes. Cupid, thinking he had conquered the sage, then shot his arrow. But all these attempts to seduce Markandeya proved futile, just like the useless endeavors of an atheist. O learned Shanaka, while Cupid and his followers tried to harm the sage, they felt themselves being burned alive by his potency. Thus, they stopped their mischief, just like children who had aroused a sleeping snake. O Brahmana, the followers of King Indra had impudently attacked the saintly Markandeya, yet he did not succumb to any influence of false ego. For great souls, such tolerance is not at all surprising. The mighty King Indra was almost the mighty King Indra was most astonished when he heard of the mystic powers of the exalted sage Markandeya and saw how Cupid and his associates had become powerless in his presence. Desiring to bestow his mercy upon the saintly Markandeya, who had perfectly fixed his mind in self-realization through penance, Vedic study, and observance of regulative principles, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appeared before the sage in the form of Nara Narayan Rishi. One of them was of a whitish complexion, the other blackish, and they both had four arms. Their eyes resembled the petals of blooming lotuses, and they wore garments of black deerskin and bark. Along with the three-stranded sacred thread in their hands, which were most purifying, they carried the mendicant's water pot, straight bamboo shaft, and lotus seed prayer beads, as well as the all-purifying Vedas in the symbolic form of bundles of darba grass. Their bearing was tall, and their yellow effulgence, the color of radiant lightning, appearing as austerity personified, they were being worshipped by the foremost demigods. These two sages, Nara and Narayan, were the direct personal forms of the Supreme Lord. When Markandeya Rishi saw them, he immediately stood up and then with great respect offered them obeisances by falling down flat on the ground like a stick. The ecstasy of seeing them completely satisfied Markandeya's body, mind, and senses and caused the hairs of his body to stand on end and his eyes to fill with tears. Overwhelmed, Markandeya found it difficult to look at them. Standing with his hands folded in supplication and his head bowed in humility, Markandeya felt such eagerness that he imagined he was embracing the two lords. In a voice choked with ecstasy, he repeatedly said, "I offer my humble obeisances to you." He gave them sitting places and washed their feet and then worshipped them with presentations of argya, sandalwood pulp, fragrant oils, incense, and flower garlands. Markandeya Rishi once again bowed down at the lotus feet of those two most worshipful sages who were sitting at ease, ready to bestow all mercy upon him. He then addressed them as follows. Sri Markandeya said, "O mighty, almighty Lord, how can I possibly describe you? You awaken the vital air, which then impels the mind, senses, and power of speech to act. This is true for all ordinary conditioned souls and even for great demigods like Brahma and Shiva. So it is certainly true for me. Nevertheless, you become the intimate friend of those who worship you. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, These two personal forms of yours have appeared to bestow the ultimate benefit for the three worlds, the cessation of material misery and the conquest of death. My Lord, although you create this universe and then assume many transcendental forms to protect it, you also swallow it up, just like a spider who spins and later withdraws its own web. Because you are the protector and supreme controller of all moving and non-moving beings, anyone who takes shelter of your lotus feet can never be touched by the contamination of material work, material qualities, or time. Great sages who have assimilated the essential meaning of the Vedas offer their prayers to you. To gain your association, they bow down to you at every opportunity and constantly worship you and meditate upon you. My dear Lord, even Lord Brahma, who enjoys his exalted position for the entire duration of the universe, fears the passage of time. Then what to speak of those whom Brahma creates, the conditioned souls? They encounter fearful dangers at every step of their lives. I do not know of any relief from this fear except shelter at your lotus feet, which are the very form of liberation. Therefore, I worship your lotus feet. Having renounced my identification with the material body and everything else that covers my true self, these useless, insubstantial, and temporary coverings are merely presumed to be separate from you, whose intelligence encompasses all truth. By obtaining you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Master of the Soul, one attains everything desirable. My dear Lord, O Supreme Friend of the conditioned soul, although for the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this world, you accept the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance, which constitute your illusory potency, you specifically employ the mode of goodness to liberate the conditioned souls. The other two modes simply bring them suffering, illusion, and fear. I offer my humble obeisances unto him, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the all-pervading and all-inclusive form of the universe, as well as its spiritual master. I bow down to Lord Naranarayan, the supremely worshipful deity appearing as a sage, and also to the saintly Nara, the best of human beings, who is fixed in perfect goodness, fully in control of his speech, and the propagator of the Vedic literature. O Lord, because fearlessness, spiritual happiness, and the kingdom of God are all achieved through the mode of pure goodness, your devotees consider this mode, but never passion and ignorance, to be a direct manifestation of you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Intelligent persons thus worship your beloved transcendental form, composed of pure goodness, along with the spiritual forms of your pure devotees. My dear Lord, the Vedic literatures alone reveal confidential knowledge of your Supreme Personality, and thus, even such great scholars as Lord Brahma himself are bewildered in their attempt to understand you through empirical methods. Each philosopher understands you according to his particular speculative conclusions. I worship that Supreme Person, knowledge of whom is hidden by the bodily designations covering the conditioned soul's spiritual identity. So that completes the chapter. So nice to hear the glories of a pure devotee. Okay, so I'm going to stop here. Thank you so much. A few details here in this chapter. Markandeya Rishi performed austerities, defeated by his potency, Cupid, and all his associates, and offer prayers to the Lord, Sri Hari, in his forms of Nara Narayan. Sri Sanaka was confused about the extraordinary long lifespan of Sri Markandeya, who had taken birth in Shanaka's own dynasty, yet whom had moved about alone in the ocean of devastation millions of years previously and seen a wonderful young child lying upon a banyan tree. It seemed to Shanaka that Markandeya had lived through 2 days of Brahma, and he asked Sri Suta Goswami to explain this. Suta Goswami replied that the sage Markandeya, after receiving the purificatory ritual of brahminical initiation from his father, had fixed himself in a vow of lifelong celibacy. He then worshipped the Supreme Lord Sri Hari for 6 lifetimes of Manu. In the 7th Manvantar, Lord Indra sent Kamadev, Cupid, and his associates to interrupt the sage's austerities, but Markandeya Rishi defeated them by the potency generated from his penance. Then, to show mercy to Markandeya, Lord Srihari appeared before him in the form of Sri Narayan, Naranarayan. Sri Markandeya prostrated himself in obeisances and then worshipped the lords by offering them comfortable seats, water for washing their feet, and other respectful presentations. He then prayed to the lordships. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.